This is James Corbett of The Corbett Report.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to another power-packed episode of The New World Next Week, our weekly video series where we break down three stories and give you the context and the subtext to let you really know what's going down. James and I are kind of in opposite places. It's in the middle of the night to me, so I'm the bleary-eyed one this time, and James Corbett is wide awake. But we're all wide awake and hungry for what's really going on in the news. I was out of town for a couple of days, so didn't have a whole lot of time to do my regular news trolling. But of course, this first story struck me immediately, and I knew it was a big one and posted it up from the hotel lobby on MediaMonarchy.com. Coming originally from The Guardian, missing Iranian nuclear scientist turns up at Pakistan embassy in the U.S. This from The Guardian. An Iranian nuclear scientist who was missing for over a year amid claims that he had been abducted by the Central Intelligence Agency surfaced at the Pakistani embassy in Washington this past Monday, apparently asking to be returned home. Iran accused Saudi Arabia of handing over Shahram Amiri, that last name is A-M-I-R-I, to the U.S. after he disappeared during a pilgrimage a year ago. A man purporting to be Amiri subsequently appeared in a series of internet videos saying he was hiding from U.S. agents. Amiri has now been quoted by Iranian official media as claiming that the U.S. government had intended to return him to Iran to cover up his kidnapping in Saudi Arabia. Quote, following the release of my interview in the internet, which brought disgrace to the U.S. government for this abduction, they wanted to send me back quietly to Iran by another country's airline, he told state radio from the Iranian Interests Office in Washington. Doing so, they wanted to deny the main story and cover up this abduction. However, they finally failed. Now, we do have one update from the New York Times, who mentions that an Iranian nuclear scientist who American officials say defected to the U.S. and then had second thoughts was given a hero's welcome when he returned to Tehran early Thursday morning. The scientist, Shahram Amiri, age 32, added details to his claims that he had been abducted by the CIA and Saudi intelligence. James, what's your take on this geopolitical firestorm?
Well, this is an extremely bizarre and interesting story, and I've only had time to skim through that New York Times update very quickly before we went on air here, so I'm not sure if I'm reading this correctly, but it seems like he's claiming that he's not even a nuclear scientist, so I think there's a lot of smoke and mirrors going on with this story right now, and it's probably going to take a few days for some of the details to start coming out, and even then, who knows if we're really getting the details. Obviously, we never get the full story, so I don't know if I can make any definitive pronouncements on this right now, but certainly it is playing into the just the rising rhetoric that's going on right now in the Iranian-American tensions, and all sorts of things are playing into this build-up in tensions, and it just seems to me like both sides are playing into the build-up, and I just don't like the trajectory that this is on, because it seems to me like both sides are trying to ratchet things up and trying to increase the tension. And something that strikes me along similar lines was back when Iran announced they were going to be sending that aid ship to Gaza during the height of the flotilla flap that happened a few weeks ago. And luckily that hasn't transpired and caused, you know, World War III yet. But these provocations and all these things that are floating around out there, and any one of them could be a trigger for some sort of incident that might set off the next world war, and I don't think anyone really wants that.
No, and with the ships massing, and yes, all those things, everything seems to be a tinderbox looking, waiting for a spark. But yes, as you mentioned in this update, Amiri said he had no connection with Iran's nuclear program and that he was the victim of an American conspiracy to wage psychological warfare against Iran. Now, James, something, yes, and to go into our second story, which I think segues probably quite nicely, there is a new report from the Daily Mail, and it's titled, Why I'm Certain My Friend Dr. David Kelly Was Murdered. Now, this begins with some background stories, but if we jump to the meat and potatoes, if you will, is several paragraphs down where we read, in damning evidence to the new Attorney General, Dominique Grieve, who has indicated his concerns about the case, Mai Peterson revealed that Dr. David Kelly could not have killed himself by hacking into his wrist because he could only move his arm with difficulty due to an old injury. He couldn't even cut a steak, said Peterson, holding her own arm out stiffly to mimic his disability. He hurt his elbow and was incredibly weak in that arm. She also rubbished claims that he had taken 29 coproximal painkiller pills before cutting his wrist, saying he struggled to swallow pills. Kelly suffered from unexplained dysphagia, a syndrome that can make it almost impossible to swallow pills while food and other substances are ingested without a problem. This has also been confirmed by other friends. Mai Peterson recalls offering him a pill for a headache, which he refused, saying he couldn't swallow any pills and explaining he had had the problem for years. Speaking exclusively to the Mail, the twice-divorced Peterson, who is fluent in five languages, insisted that she was determined to honor the memory of a kind, brilliant man by unearthing the truth about who really killed him, saying, "This cries out for a formal, independent, and complete review. If that means stirring the ashes, so be it." James, do you want to give folks, I suppose, the quick background to the story of Dr. David Kelly? Because again, as we sometimes unfortunately note, folks have a hard time remembering maybe what happened last week, let alone last several years ago now.
Right. Well, Dr. Kelly was basically caught up in the brouhaha about the weapons of mass destruction and the Iraq war buildup, and basically he was the one that was fingered for blowing the whistle on Blair's lies about the 45-minute claim that Iraq could launch weapons of mass destruction within 45 minutes, and he blew the whistle on that, and his cover from his journalist source was eventually blown through an official inquiry, and that supposedly led to him killing himself, blah, blah, blah. I think a lot of people are probably familiar with the official story by now, but certainly to anyone who has looked into the details of his death, there are so many unanswered questions. And as that report actually notes, a lot of these questions have about his ability, even his physical ability to commit suicide in the way that he supposedly did, have been called into question before by other people. This is just new corroboration from another source, and people will say, well, where has this source been for the last 5 years? Well, apparently she has been trying since basically the first month after his death to get this evidence on the record, but it hasn't happened yet. So this is just, you know, more evidence, if any, was needed to add to all sorts of things, like the way the body was positioned when it was found, the lack of blood at the scene, the lack of a heat signature trace in the infrared cameras that were scanning over that spot, and the helicopters that went over directly over where the body was found hours later, supposedly right after the body had died, meaning there should have been a heat signature. All sorts of things, again, piling up on top of each other, plus the fact that Dr. Kelly told multiple friends that he would be found dead in the woods sometime, and it turned out that's exactly what happened, and he was, of course, referring to shadowy forces. He was not talking about committing suicide. So again, conservatively, let's say there's good reason to believe that this is more than a suicide, and I will definitely be going into this specific case in more detail in a future podcast episode as part of my Requiem for the Suicided series.
Which also reminds me of another case of someone that I imagine you'll probably cover in some time, is the story of Danny Casolaro. And we don't have time to get into him and the Octopus and the Inslaw and Promise Software and all of that, but the same situation, he had supposedly slashed his wrist, and his father, who is, I believe, a doctor, said, there's no way, he was afraid of blood. He would have never have done it.
Absolutely. Well, just another case to add, and there are many, many to go through, so we'll just keep this one in our minds and keep it fresh, but there's really no way to segue out of that and into story number three, so what do you got up third?
We're going to jump to one of my sister sites. It's called foodworldorder.com to get a quick report from the fantastic site allgov.com. 46,000 dairy farms closed in the last 10 years. Times are especially bad for dairy farmers across the United States. About 40% of all dairy farms, or 46,000, went out of business over the last decade due to falling milk prices and rising costs. Farmers went from getting $21.70 per 100 pounds of milk to $11.30 from 07 and 09, while animal feed costs increased 35% and fuel prices rose 30%. A big problem resides in the Federal Milk Marketing Order system, which the U.S. government created during the Depression as a way to keep dairy farmers in business. Today, however, the FMMO system has become a weapon used by huge dairy companies to accomplish that same nefarious goal, paying farmers as little as possible. This also kind of ties in, James, with the whole raw milk controversy, and it also ties in with ultimately us having control over what goes in our own bodies. This ties into all of it, and that's, I think, why this site's called Food World Order.
Right, and this is another extremely important story for those links that you mentioned, but also for the aspect of the story that this is ultimately about giant big agra taking on small farmers, and we see that time and time and time again through all sorts of legislation that big agra is able to buy its way into power. We've seen, obviously, people like Vilsack and ex-Monsanto people appointed to head, you know,
James,
key positions.
I've got to interrupt you, man. I'm sorry. We've already run out of time on this episode.
Right. Suffice it to say, it's just the way business works. All right, James, thanks again.
All right, man. Take care.